Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, House of Mystery number 164, cover date January 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Jim Mooney, edited by Jack Schiff, featuring Dr. Cyclops, the villain with the doomsday stare, written by Dave Wood, art by Jim Mooney, and Marco vs. Manhunter, written by Jack Miller, art by Joe Serta. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go go.
See how the fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away.
A costumed crook named Dr. Cyclops begins using super-powered spectacles to commit robberies in Zenith City. When Robbie Reed hears the news, he becomes the superhero Zip-Tied and confronts the crook. Meanwhile, Vulture contacts Marco Xavier to deliver a weapon to a party held by Aldo Suzzi. Agents of Vulture plan to use the weapon against the Martian Manhunter, not knowing that he is Marco Xavier. Confused? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
Well, after my long morning in the lab shack, I took a nap for 2 hours.
You did not.
Sure I did.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, because I also took a nap.
You're kidding.
But I wasn't in the lab shack.
Where were you?
This morning?
Mm-hmm.
I went to church.
Oh, that's right. That's what I call a lab shack.
It was fun at church, wasn't it, this
morning?
Well,
it was fun, except, good
the gnats.
Christ, the gnats.
Yes, but they weren't biting gnats. They were just gnats.
No,
just,
but they flew into my... They'd fly into my eyes underneath my glasses.
Yes.
That's... I don't like that.
No, of course not. No, no. This is... today, of course, this week was the Feast of St. Michael. And we... of course, you and I are trying out a new church.
Yes.
An Episcopal church, and they did the blessing of the animals. So they did service outside, and people brought their dogs, and it was so much fun. And I don't even know the couple whose dog kept on coming up to me, and it was a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
This beautiful, super, super friendly boxer. I think he's 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
and was just the sweetest thing in the world. I just kept on leaning over and giving it pats and scratches and stuff. So, and they had also an 8-week-old puppy with them.
Dog.
But it was nice, wasn't it? There were old dogs
it
and
was.
New dogs and all sorts of things. And people, it was a real special service.
We did not take our dogs because Junebug is psychotic and she doesn't like being out of her house or in public. Like her daddy.
Yeah, she only enjoys going on a trip when she's going from a house to another house.
Right.
That's it.
And even that's under duress.
Yes, yes. She's a very much a homebody. Yes, like her daddy.
Yes.
Yes. Not this daddy.
No, this
yeah.
present company speaking.
Yes.
What else is new? Let's see.
Well, what did we do last weekend? We had some fall fun last weekend, didn't we?
Yes. With our friends. We went to a pumpkin patch.
Yes. And then I went to a board meeting and... Oh, I went to a football game yesterday.
Oh, how was that for you?
It was fun, actually. The weather's so perfect right now.
Weather's very nice.
It is wonderful. We have the windows open right now. Oh, stink bug on the screen. Boom!
Do the stink bugs look different to you?
So you look smaller.
Yeah.
Yes.
What's up with that?
I don't understand that either. But I know something I did this week. So we, of course, we got together with our friends Chuck and Lori for watching a movie.
Chuck of Nerd Orchestra Podcast,
right.
Our other going concerns.
So we watched our other, I'm not going to say the movie we
no,
watched.
Don't. No, don't.
Yes, well, I won't give that away, but it was a lot of fun. And then on Thursday, Chuck and Lori and another friend had tickets to go see something called Paranormal Cirque, which is like it's a circus, but it's a people circus.
Like,
you know?
Cirque du Soleil.
Like Cirque du Soleil, but in one ring and with a tent and everything. And this is called Paranormal Cirque, with the theme being, of course, the paranormal.
Yes. Well, it is the season.
Yes, this is fun. And it was, I went into it thinking, oh my gosh, at least I'm with friends, so it'll be fun, right? But I wasn't quite sure what to expect. It was a blast. We had a great time. It was spectacular, you know, all sorts of, like a guy on a motorcycle with a woman underneath, and he's on a high wire, and he's riding his motorcycle, and people with whips, and like hanging from ropes and doing the rope things and the silks, you know, the gymnastics, and then just this couple on roller skates, and they're just going in circles and doing these really cool things on the roller skates, and the culmination, or rather, of the show was a man on one of those wire contraptions that spins in circles, and he's walking inside of a cage, and then he jumps on top on the outside, and he's walking on the outside, and there's no safety thing on him, and if he falls, he's going to be seriously hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really exciting, lots of fun, and of course it was adult themed. Very adult theme. Yes.
I heard there were dildos involved.
There was a, and it was, there's of course, in a traditional circus, there's always a sort of a comic relief clown.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an adult sort of comic relief clown in this. And of course, he, you know, plays around with the audience members. And this one thing he carries in his suitcase, and he gets a guy to stand up, and he holds a suitcase, and as he unpacks the suitcase, he's pulling all these items out. One of the items he pulls out was a dildo. But it was very much an adult thing. Like the women were very, very scantily clad with leather tops on with spikes sticking out of them. It was very, 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 like the whole theme of the thing is paranormal, suggestive, sort of burlesque kind of gymnastics with the supernatural. So this,
now through October 12th at the Hagerstown Municipal Outlet Mall.
Don't take your kids, but it is absolutely worth it for some fun. Yeah.
Maybe I'll go this week when you're out of town.
Yes, I have to go out of town, don't I? I have to go across the state, which is here. It's a 5.5-hour drive.
Right.
So yeah, I'll be across the state for work. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for a conference.
I'll find something to keep myself busy.
I'm sure you'll be watching oodles and oodles of old movies.
No, I'll be coming up with new superheroes that Robbie Reed can dial into that I could send into Adventure Comics. That was a thing when I was a teenager.
What's that?
They revived the Dial H for Hero concept.
Mm-hmm.
And the readers could send in their ideas for superheroes.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And sometimes they got picked. I never got picked. But, of course, I never sent one in.
Oh, well.
I know.
Okay, all right.
House of Mystery, number 164, featuring the most original character in comic history, Robbie Reed, Dial H for Hero, the boy who could change into 1,000 superheroes. Challenge accepted. But, Rob.
Yes.
Can even Robbie Reed's amazing powers prevent him from falling under the glaring, deadly spell of Dr. Cyclops, the villain with the doomsday stare?
Huh, turn the page to find out.
I don't know either. I went to high school with someone named Robbie Reed.
You did?
I did. Not this Robbie Reed.
Of course.
He had dark hair. And he was a Star Trek runner.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can tell you about
him.
Okay. Now we haven't got to touch.
No.
We never spoke in high school either. Beware.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let him peer at you, for once he does, you'll be robbed. Or worse. And to prove our point, Robbie Reed, the teenager who possesses the amazing mystery dial that can transform him into countless heroes, tackles the Wizard of Lenses, only to fall under the glaring deadly spell of
Dr. Cyclops, the villain with the doomsday stare.
Didn't... Oh, that was just Cyclops. Epiclipso. In one of our early episodes, he fought Cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
With their leader had one giant eyeball.
Okay. Yeah, Cyclops is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, going back to Greece.
Really, is it?
I'm just saying, it's like, well, I'm just saying, it's not uncommon for a Cyclops to appear as some sort of monster or villain. It happens a lot, you know, in Western culture.
You know how they invented Cyclopses? They found mammoth skulls, which look like they just have one giant eye hole.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
They invented giant creatures with one eye.
Of course. That makes sense.
I'll say, Zenith City. And the lunch hour crowd is little, nearly shaken out of its wits as...
Oh, who is it?
Eek! What is that? It's Dr. Cyclops. He's got a red jumpsuit on with a green cape, giant eyeball on his chest. It's a picture of an eyeball. That's not his actual eyeball. His actual eyeball is actually in his head.
His actual eyeball's in his actual head.
He looks like Christmas, red and green.
He does.
He is about to prove what he can do, and suddenly the strange rays shooting from his bizarre glasses take effect, and everyone's wallets and purses, the money out of their purses flies. This is actually, I'd call that a pocketbook.
It's a pocketbook. Yeah, it's not a purse.
And he's got a bag ready to collect all the loot.
He sure does.
With his magnetic money lenses. And off he goes. Zenith City hasn't seen the last of him. But he still has another crop of cash to collect. Bye-bye, everybody.
Someone's screaming, he's mad! Mad!
Now, Robbie, as we know, lives in Littleville.
Littleville.
And word of the Fantastic Thief crackles quickly over the airwaves and to Robbie Reed in his lab shack.
And at this very moment, the costumed criminal who calls himself Dr. Cyclops is heading south of Zenith City. Who knows what fiendish robbery he is now plotting?
Robbie doesn't know, but he's sure about to find out as a superhero. If you're new here, listener, Robbie Reed is a teenager. He's super smart. He has a lab shack out back of his house where he lives with his grandpa and Miss Millie, the, quote, housekeeper. Mm-hmm. I think Miss Millie and grandpa are sleeping together.
They dine together, don't they?
They sure do.
Mm-hmm.
And Robbie has this strange alien device, which he found. And when he dials the word hero, he becomes a superhero. A different one each time, except for the one time when he repeated. And then also the one time where he became Plastic Man, who is a known superhero.
He became Plastic Man.
Yeah, remember?
Nope.
Oh. So he dials H for hero, and he turns into Sakuma G. A human wave, a superhero named Ziptide.
Ziptide.
I love everything about Ziptide. I love the costume. I love the whole look, the hairdo, the powers.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I wish he went spun off into his own series.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ziptide hits the surface of a local stream. Stream? That's the ocean.
No. He takes the stream to the ocean.
It says, as he hits the surface of the stream.
Yeah. No, look at the panel right below where he picks up the hero dial.
Right.
He's going from his house,
yes,
his shack, right into a stream.
Yes.
He says, as this superhero, my best bet to get to the Zenith City is via water route. The stream leads right to the place.
Yes. Then the next panel, then as Ziptide hits the surface of the stream, but he's pictured... It's the biggest stream I've ever seen.
Well, I think it just leads into a river. It doesn't actually say the ocean.
No.
Well, Hudson River.
That's what I'm saying. It says stream, but it pictures a giant, the Mississippi River, or the ocean.
Are you upset because he didn't say, and the stream led me to this ocean, or this larger
body of water? I'm upset because the art is not following the text.
Okay.
And that's a classic art mistake. I don't know why the editor didn't step in. Put a stop to it. Also, he says he's being swept down the stream at super speed. That's not super speed. It's regular speed of water.
Maybe he can control the speed of water.
Oh, now that may be.
Yeah.
Well, Ziptide cascades into the Zenith City area where Dr. Cyclops is peering into an armored truck with his
X-ray
Cyclops lens.
Glass.
Yes.
One eye.
Ziptide pops out of the river and sees that Dr. Cyclops is switching to another pair of his bizarre glasses. Inferno Opticals, we're going to call them.
Okay.
Which will sear a hole through the wall of the armored vehicle like a knife cutting butter. And you can bet Ziptide's not going to have any part of this.
No.
The
truck gets hot.
The truck gets super hot. The driver and one other guy have to get out, but there's somebody trapped inside.
Trapped inside. He says that he can't get out of the molten truck.
Luckily, Ziptide's there to throw little drops of water at Dr. Cyclops.
Pew, get out of here.
Pew, pew.
Splat, splat, splat. He's literally throwing finger-sized bits of water at him. So Ziptide surrounds the truck with water and whisks it. No, it doesn't whisk it away. Just cools it down
with his aqua body.
Yes. Lifts the trapped guard out from inside.
Yes.
And he says, "You're one of those superheroes I've been reading about, and you saved my life. Thanks, pal."
I imagine that's how Ziptide talks, because he's made of water.
I see.
But Dr. Cyclops is gone. He's used the diversion to make his escape.
Yeah. He says he's taken off, but he says, "Hey, but he didn't get the loot, and you saved a few lives, mister."
Well, fine, but this Cyclops character will strike again. I'll get another crack at him, but right now I'd better get home. Gramps and Miss Millie will be worried if I don't show. It's lunchtime.
The human tidal wave sweeps off up the stream he used earlier until...
In fact, it is lunchtime. He's being summoned to lunch. Maybe Robbie's too smart for school, so we never see him in school.
Oh, he's got tons of time.
He's always out in his lab shack.
Yeah, maybe these are written in the summer.
So... Robbie uses the H dial to dial Hero in reverse so that he becomes Robbie Reed again and reports promptly to lunch, which is served in silver. What do you call that? The chafing dish with the silver thing with the lid on it?
No, a chafing dish is something that you would serve out of. This is simply covered. She's covered the main entree.
That's pretty fancy for lunch.
It is fancy for lunch, yes. Well, she does. Well, you know, she's dressed just... Neither of them are dressed up for lunch.
Well, they must save money on clothes to pour into lunch.
I guess. Perhaps she'd been calling him and she needed to cover it to keep it hot.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like they're having a delicious dish of rice.
Plate of white goo.
White goo.
They must have the same cookbook as Mary Worth. Mary Worth is always serving lumps of goo or brown globs.
The artists don't really care about that.
They don't.
No.
They spend a great deal of time on Mary's muffins because when she is baking muffins, that means she's about to meddle in someone's business. So they always lovingly draw the plate of muffins that she's baking.
Oh, I saw something. I'm going to say a curse word right now. I saw something on the Instas last night that made me laugh out loud, and it was somebody was holding a can of a plate of baked goods and said, I baked you a bunch of shut the fuck up cakes. Made me laugh.
Now, Gramps.
I would love to give those out to people.
Why don't you?
Here's some, hey, baby, I got you. Shut the fuck up cake.
Now, Gramps has been listening to the radio as well. He's up on current events. Bizarre, Dr. Cyclops has struck again. He's just been sighted in the vicinity of the Diamond Exchange.
Diamond Exchange. Wow, they have everything there in his town.
I do recall that I believe Littleville has its own Diamond Exchange and port and Museum of Natural History, if I recall correctly from previous
stories. Everything there.
I know. Robbie excuses himself. I'm not hungry.
So the hero of the radio. The costume criminal has just been sighted in the vicinity of the Diamond Exchange and is using his fantastic opticals to rob. Gotta go!
I'll be back for dinner. Bye.
And so what is her name? The
Miss Millie.
Miss Millie says, "What on earth is wrong with that boy? He keeps jumping up like a grasshopper."
"I was the same way when I was a lad, Millie. Boys will be boys, especially when they have a lot of imagination."
Are Robbie's parents dead?
I presume so.
Wow.
Unless he's just, you know, out on loan to Miss Millie and Gramps to invent things in his lap shack.
Well, that's awful.
Now, Robbie races out to get his H dial, and he sure hopes that the next superhero becomes will have the superpowers to take the blinkers off of Dr. Cyclops for keeps. He never knows what kind of superhero he's going to turn into.
Never knows.
That's the gimmick.
So he stands in front of the mirror and he goes, "Sakamajee, I'm a supernova superhero this time. Let me think. A supernova is a very brilliant star with tremendous energy. And as such, I can soar through the air to get the diamond exchange in seconds."
Whoosh. He gets there. There he is, Dr. Cyclops, wearing a pair of glasses that creates an anti-gravity field to float valuable gems out of the diamond exchange. And also, all the people.
Yeah, they're floating out.
Out of an upper story window. But here's where Supernova shatters his plans.
So he punches Cyclops in the eye.
Yeah, breaks his glasses. Says,
"Another superhero! Rawr!"
Bad plan, because this means all the people that were floating midair are now plummeting to their death. Luckily, Supernova does Dr. Husband's favorite trick. Uses super speed to create an updraft of cyclonic wind.
I love that you call it my favorite trick.
It is.
You know that it's one that I despise.
Well, I thought you specifically despised the one where they spin their arms.
I do the arms. Yeah, okay. You're absolutely right, because the arms aren't built to work like that, but yes.
Maybe the Flash's arms are built to
work. Nope, they aren't. No, he would probably spinning that fast, he would run them out of the rip them right out of his sockets.
No, because he's protected by his super speed aura. That's why his clothes don't burn off when he's racing around.
Oh my.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's how he can carry other people and their clothes don't burn off.
I wonder if he's ever been handcuffed and couldn't vibrate out of the handcuffs but spun his fingers at super speed to create a whirlwind.
I'm going to make it my mission to find out. Well, that's what I'm going to do while you're out of town.
Okay.
Find a panel of Flash spinning his fingers at super speed.
That would come in handy in the kitchen when you're cooking.
Yes.
So like, oh, I think I'll just make this soup.
We know what Julia Child always said.
What?
You can't cook without using your hands, so don't be afraid of it. She just stuck her hands right in chicken carcasses and everything, slopped all the chicken juice around the kitchen.
Oh.
Nothing stopped her.
Mm-mm.
Except eventually old age.
Well, that the death comes for us all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Dr. Cyclops changes glasses quickly from his optical utility belt, and he's got ice beam glasses. Oh. He doesn't name them.
No, but they're freeze ray glasses.
Freeze ray glasses, and creates a layer of ice around Supernova, who then plummets to Earth. But
Four pages later, Supernova a supernova is saturated with atomic radiation from the outer space. Maybe, just maybe, if I can concentrate my energy, I can break out of this ice tomb.
I think it might work by concentrating all of my mental thought. I'm generating superpower, atomic power to melt this ice.
I did it! My atomic power shattered the ice prison. I'm free to get my hands on that fool!
Now all the people that I just saved from plummeting to their death are dead of radiation poisoning. At least I broke out of this ice.
I'm still alive. That's all that matters.
Dr. Cyclops is not going to be stopped. He's full of tricks. He's
changed his goggles. His goggle once again.
Eclipse lenses, which cast Supernova into darkness. He can't even see his hands in front of his face.
Mm.
And to top it off, I can feel my Supernova powers waning. I have to dial back to Robbie Reed and hope I can dial in again right away to another superhero. So, also, he never knows how long he's going to remain any one superhero.
Talk about living in the present.
Doesn't know how long in between becoming one superhero that he can become another one. That was one thing I did like in the revival series. Mm-hmm. There were two children, Chris and Vicky. Mm-hmm. And they could only become a superhero for 1 hour. Mm-hmm. And then they had to wait an hour before they could become another one.
That's terrible. They had to work fast.
Take a break. They did.
Yeah.
Well, you got to cram the three superheroes into one story.
Play hard and rest.
In Chris and Vicky's case, that's six superheroes per story.
My God.
Mm-hmm. They don't play around in the 80s. He does, however, dial right away again, and Sakamajee, he becomes a superhero robot.
Robot.
He can just feel the robot's strength and power surging through his body. Why, this superhero's got everything. I need to put Dr. Cyclops out of action, if I can find him.
And this time he won't get away from Robbie the Super Robot.
I was going to say that was a stupid name, but that's his actual name, Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet, the film.
So, there's a built-in radar sonar in his chest, and it's pinpointing Dr. Cyclops, pulling him into to find him at the Zenith City Museum.
Mm-hmm. And using a pair of fantastic diminishing glasses to shrink the paintings in the museum and draw them to him at postage stamp size.
He's going to collect a fortune in masterpieces. And once he glares upon them through his reverso lens, they will be back to their original forms.
I can blackmail the museum, the world, for their return.
He turns around and he says, oh, what's up in the sky? Another superhero. A robot.
And about to put the lid on you, crackpot.
And that's what you think, tin hero. Wait until you fall under the glare of these goggles.
What's happening to me? Ellipsis? Question mark.
You've just become a victim of my anti-metallic glasses, Robot Wonder. You can't get near me now.
That's what you think, Mr. Ellipsis, but I've got a gimmick to counter this metallic field, a molecule transformer that can convert my robot body, Ellipsis, into any form I desire, Ellipsis, and as a wooden robot, I'll utilize my splinter spears to down you, Ellipsis.
Once again, the Incredible Cyclops sweeps his hand into his bizarre optical utility belt. A barrage of wooden missiles coming right at me. I've got to move fast. Only one pair of goggles that will get rid of them. My inferno opticals. Ha ha! I'm burning them up in the air. And now to escape via my zoom lenses.
Oh, come on. How can the lenses... It would only give his eyeballs super speed.
I know. Maybe his eyeball pulls him along at super speed.
Also, Robbie, this guy's already used his inferno opticals once in this story, and you're going to turn into wood?
Yeah, I thought that was a bad call, but what was his choice? He could have turned himself into a non-metallic metal.
He could have turned himself...
I'm sorry, non-magnetic metal.
Yeah.
Like, I think lead is non-magnetic.
I don't know.
I don't either. Or aluminum doesn't have magnetic properties, does it?
Well, he could have turned himself into diamond or granite.
A diamond robot would have been nice.
Yes. Mm. So, Dr. Cyclops probably tried to rob it, shrink him down.
Shrink him down and put him in his pocket.
Or he could have turned into a robot made of human flesh.
Ooh, that's gross, because that would better make him very vulnerable. Or plastic. Plastic.
Like... Be Plastic Man.
Yes.
Dr. Cyclops taking off at super speed with a pair of jet-powered lenses.
Seconds later, as Robbie the robot returns to his metallic self.
Sakamajee! Exclamation point. I've got a built-in sniffer as this robot hero, Ellipsis. I can actually follow Cyclops' scent with this mechanism, Ellipsis. I'm picking it up, Ellipsis. Right from the air, Ellipsis. He went this way, Ellipsis. Sure hope the trail leads me to his hideout, Ellipsis. And I'll be able to wrap this case up fast, Ellipsis.
The metallic hero scents S-C-E-N-T-S, mm-hmm. his way over valleys and hills until...
There's the end of the line, Ellipsis, a mountain cavern, exclamation point, and that's where I'll find Dr. Cyclops, comma, I'll betcha,
Alep says.
Robot Robbie swoops down into the yawning cavern entrance and... You! You found my lair! But it is one you will never escape from, Robot. He's such confidence, doesn't he? He isn't.
Yes.
He hasn't succeeded yet.
No. It's checkout time, Cyclops. --, and you're headed for the clink! !
The villain suddenly fingers a button on his unique control board, and your friend Supernova escaped the power of my freeze lenses, but your metallic body can never withstand the glare of my giant optical icer.
My innards, Ellipsis, can feel them icing up, Ellipsis. My controls are frozen! ! Bold text. But as a robot, I have one ability the human superheroes don't have, Ellipsis. My metallic body can withstand terrific impact, full text, Ellipsis. Perhaps enough to rattle these icicles from me, Ellipsis. It worked, --. I'm, quote, de-iced, unquote, ! But the mad doctor's making for his optical utility belt, bold text, Ellipsis.
I'll put a death spare on that ten fool yet.
Sure hope my control gears are back in action after being frozen, Ellipsis.
Suddenly, one of the metallic wonder's arms springs out and...
Just like Elastigirl.
All my glasses in the belt, shattered by the huge steel fist.
A little gimmick of my own, bold text, doc, --, and it's a blow that's gonna send you to prison, bold text, !
Yipes! Now it's got me in a vice!
Just thought I'd shake a little sense into you before I call the police in, Ellipsis.
Later, after the police arrive at the cavern lair.
I stacked all the loot that optical crackpot stole just outside the cavern, ! See you around, men, Ellipsis.
We hope so, pal, and thanks.
And as Robbie Reed hits the pillow that night.
Those sure were exciting superheroes. Wonder what I'll become when I go onto the Dial H action the next time. Well, guess I'll just have to wait and see.
And so will we, Robbie. Be sure to dial in on the next Dial H issue and find out, listeners. Now, you may think it's silly that I'm verbalizing every single thing on the page, but you have to think about that when you're writing documents that are 508 compliant, because reading programs for the visually impaired will verbalize if you put two spaces after a period that will say space. So stop doing it. Gen X.
I just want to say that I have on this podcast before said that I will double space until the day I die.
Yes, and I will shame everyone who does it.
I stopped double spacing last year.
Thank you.
Yeah, or whatever it was. Shortly after that great tirade I went on, I thought, oh, what's the harm in single spacing? And now whenever I get documents to edit that are double spaced,
yeah.
Don't you know I do an automatic search and find for double spaces and convert them all into single spaces?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That's what everyone should be doing.
You're never too old to change.
No. Hmm. And it's a compliance issue.
Oh, sure. So, actually, it was because you told me that that I stopped doing it.
Well, I have to know these things in my
line of work.
Hey.
Yeah?
We should do a time machine mailbag.
Time machine mailbag, where we read letters from the past and answer them today. Time machine mailbag, better late than never is what mother used to say.
Dear Dr. Bob.
Yeah?
My problem is about a boy I am very much in love with. We used to go together, but we had a quarrel and broke up. A few months later, he married another girl. I think he still loves me. Do you think it's wise for me to start seeing him again? I'm 15 years old. And my friends think I'm too young to be in love. What shall I do?
Who's writing, please?
Signed, Vera.
Vera? There's so much going on in this letter. You're 15. First of all, you were dating this boy and he's married a few months later. That means he was over 18 when you were dating, presumably, unless you're writing, I don't have your location. It might be West Virginia or Kentucky or someplace where they can get married when you're nine.
He's married, dear. No, you should not be seeing him again, unless you're a town harlot, which it kind of sounds like you might be going that direction.
Right.
Also, has he offered to see you again? What's wrong with him?
She sounds like a young stalker in training.
I bet his wife is pregnant and he's trying to get some action on the side.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
She
says, do you think it's wise for me to start seeing him
No.
again? Oh, I think he still loves me. Oh, my goodness.
I don't think it was wise for you to see him in the first place. If he loved you so much, he would have married you.
I think she needs to get to
She some needs wise. A smack across the face from her mother. Where are the parents in this situation?
Thank you. Oh.
Vera.
Mm. Go ahead.
Dear Dr. Husband,
mm-hmm.
I am a high school student, and our class is having senior prom this spring. I am planning to invite a boy who lives in another city, and I would like to know which part of the expenses I am supposed to pay for. I know that I'm expected to buy the tickets, but must I also pay for the transportation? Signed, Anna.
Well, Anna, it's good of you to buy the tickets for the prom. Yes, as you are inviting him to be your date, I'm assuming, or he's invited himself to be your date, whatever. He will be your date, and he lives in another city. It is appropriate for you to buy the tickets to the prom. However, he should be picking up all of the other expenses. If you are truly worth traveling from another city to attend your prom, the single most important night of your silly, silly teenage life, then I think it's appropriate for him to pay the costs to come. That includes possibly taking you out to dinner. That mm-hmm. includes a corsage. That includes whatever expenses you incur. A soda pop. Don't you agree?
Yes.
Yes.
Unless absolutely. He lives in, like, another country or something.
If he lives in another country, you are...
You shouldn't be going to prom.
No,
you be
you're going overreaching. To
that country.
Yeah, you're overreaching the boundaries of this relationship. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Okay. Dear Dr. Bob,
mm-hmm.
where I live, all girls and boys pair off and go steady. And if you don't, you just feel out of everything. That's why I have a steady boyfriend. Besides, it's awfully nice to know that you can always count on one boy to take you to parties and to go to school dances. But my mother objects to this because she feels that 16 is too young for a girl to tie herself down to one boy. I suppose she's right. But how can I break the custom and still not feel left out? Hildy,
I admittedly had a somewhat stunted, insular teenage life. But I never understood the concept of playing the field like that. Did people really do that? In the 60s? What? Just go from one boy to another.
Of course.
But not in my town.
Well, of course, they also, I mean, it wasn't customary for them to play around as much
oh,
as
Oh, yes, it was. Come on.
Oh, well.
I don't, people in my high school, they would go steady and then, you know, not get married, but they go steady for a while, then go steady with someone else. But they wouldn't just hop around one boy after another like a teenage Jezebel.
Is 16 too young to go steady?
No, I don't think so. Do you?
What's going steady, really? Just like your boyfriend and girlfriend?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's too young. No.
No. Not, especially not if you've been pinned. Hilda, you do what you like. I think you might be a lesbian anyway, so...
In which case...
Just, you know.
Have your life. Live your life.
Group dates.
Yeah.
Group live your life. Movies with a group.
Yeah. No need to tie yourself down to some stupid boy.
No. Boys are idiots, as everyone knows.
Everyone knows.
Well, that's all that we have time for today with Time Machine Mailbag. We'll have to come back at another time. No pun intended.
Aw, nice.
Time Machine Mailbag, where we read letters from the past and answer them today. Time Machine Mailbag. Never is what mother used to say.
This isn't a time machine letter, but I have to comment on a letter in the Dial L for Letters column.
Okay.
I'm worried about these boys at the University of Idaho.
What?
Dear editor, as a rule, we aren't comic readers, but here at the University of Idaho, reading Dial H for Hero has gotten to be the in thing just as much or possibly more than Batman. We enjoyed everything in issue 159, but we felt you were lacking in a few technical points, blah, 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 blah. Here's the cream. We would like to make a few suggestions of our own. Tiger Woman, with the head of a tiger and the mind and body of a woman. Robbie's not a, I mean, this is good for them. They're socially progressive, I guess. Robbie does have a female friend, and she will use the H dial in a future issue, which is not checkerboarded, unfortunately. So we won't see it. But why were they imagining a teenage boy turning into a woman with the head of a tiger? They're good boys, but if they start talking about tiger women, you better run for hell. That's Jim Weaver and Ben Peterson. Jim and Ben, if you're listening, well done. And now we come to the special feature of our House of Mystery, the second story featuring Aunt Owns, Manhunter from Mars, which... I meant to comment on this. The populace and villains only refer to him as Manhunter.
Oh, not Martian Manhunter.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess is also progressive because he's 7 feet tall with green skin and they're colorblind, I guess.
Well, Marco Xavier, actually Manhunter's secret identity, receives his most astonishing assignment for Vulture, Worldwide Crime Syndicate. When he is handed the weapon specially designed to destroy Vulture's greatest enemy, Manhunter. Read the strange story of Marco versus Manhunter.
Also, if you're new here, yes, Martian Manhunter was previously using the secret identity of police detective John Jones. But John Jones was quote-unquote killed, and he assumed a new identity as Marco Xavier, who is working for the criminal organization Vulture.
Vulture.
And they don't know yet, because I believe the real Marco Xavier also died. And so Manhunter assumed his identity for purposes of fighting Vulture.
Okay.
One day, at the fabulously wealthy resort of Deauville in France, which is a real place, I looked it up, where a posh charity bazaar is in progress.
What's wrong with this woman?
She's had too much filler in her cheeks.
Yeah.
She's got that Mar-a-Lago look.
Yes, yes.
Except no one at Mar-a-Lago is that thin.
No. But she does have that Mar-a-Lago look.
Ah, Signor Zuzzi. Only you would place on exhibit $10 million worth of jewels. But are you not afraid of the thieves?
Is that supposed to be French?
It was kind of a Melania Trump.
Oh, okay. Good. Very much afraid, mademoiselle. That is why I've placed detectives at every possible entrance.
But just then...
Mamma mia! A copter making off with the jewel case.
As guns begin to crack. Ah, Signor Zuzzi, we protected every means of entry except up. Only Vulture could be behind such a daring robbery. But, Signor, you do not seem very troubled.
Why should I be, Inspector Marshall? You see, I did take a certain precaution to protect my priceless jewels from above by summoning an old friend of mine.
Ma foi, the Manhunter from Mars.
Oh, there they do call him Manhunter from Mars.
Yeah.
All eyes are on the alien ace as he challenges the airborne crime craft, who try to shoot him down with bullets.
That won't work. Then as mighty Martian muscles flex.
Look, Manhunter is tearing the propellers to shreds.
As hundreds cheer, hurrah, hurrah. Now for a slow landing, so I don't damage the precious cargo.
Down he goes.
Oh, my dear Manhunter, for this, there will be a big bonus for your favorite charity. And next week, for the ball in your honor, I shall invite the most in people in Deauville.
Well, thanks, Aldo. And soon, on a winding road,
that Manhunter... Was Aldo Italian?
What? Yes, Aldo Zuzzi.
Oh, for God's sake, I did the wrong accent. We're just going to have to...
It doesn't matter. I've done three accents for each person I've read so far.
Okay, good.
Soon, on a winding road, Manhunter pauses just long enough to assume the identity of Marco Xavier, internationally known playboy and man of mystery.
Before long, as Marco enters his posh villa overlooking the gentle Mediterranean...
Wait a minute.
What, he doesn't have a villa over the Mediterranean?
Well, he does, but Deauville is in the north of France, near Normandy.
Uh-huh.
The Mediterranean is at the other end of France.
Did he walk that entire way?
Well, he could certainly fly, but it doesn't... That's not supported by the text, which says he pauses on a winding road.
So he must have walked from the north of France to the south of France.
Okay.
Very quickly.
Yeah, well, he can do it.
So he walks into his posh estate, and he gets a butler, whatever. He goes, Monsieur, there is a call for you. The caller refuses to give his name, but he says it is urgent.
Marco's been expecting this call. Marco Xavier here. Do you see, the real Marco Xavier worked for Vulture, and so that's why he's assumed identity of... Marco Xavier.
Mr. V wants you. A car will be around 2 p.m. sharp to pick you up.
I'll be waiting.
So later that day, as Marco Xavier again faces his secret enemy in the headquarters of the local Vulture unit.
Yes, faces is in quotes because Mr. V is a giant hulking figure who's got a mask over his head that makes him look like, what's that show? Charlie Brown? Halloween, when Charlie Brown's in the ghost costume.
Yes.
This is the top half of Charlie Brown's ghost costume.
Yeah, just there's something like facial features.
Yes. It kind of looks like a Mr. Potato Head without the eyeballs stuck in.
And he says, excuse me, let me try this.
Mm-hmm.
Listen carefully, Xavier. I've just been told that Manhunter is to be guest of honor at a ball to be given by Aldo Zuzzi. This is the chance I have been waiting for, to destroy the only man who has been able to stop me thus far. My laboratory has produced a weapon specifically designed to destroy Manhunter, and since you, Marco, as an old friend of Zuzzi's, are to be invited...
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. V. I'm no gunman, and...
I'm aware of that, Xavier. My gunman will be planted there as a waiter, since all servants are sure to be searched. It will be your job...
God, this is hard.
It will be your job to bring this special weapon to the ball and slip it in... slip it to him. Uh-huh. Good luck.
Slip it to him. I'm the man for the job, Mr. V. You think that voice is hard? Try doing it with a sack over your head. Now... Marco receives the weapon that will make criminal history by killing Manhunter. So he goes out into the woods at night to test the weapon and is astonished to learn that, in fact, yes, this gun can kill Manhunter.
It's a flamethrower.
A flamethrower, but how?
It's got a hell of a punch to it, too, doesn't it, for something so small?
Yes, and how in the world did Faceless discover Manhunter's single weakness on Earth, fire? I thought that was common knowledge. I thought
not
many...
at this point, not in this canon.
Well, I mean, I think we've seen previous stories where people knew it and they used it to their advantage.
Gee, I don't know.
What a jam. Anyway, Marco's got to sneak in the only weapon that can destroy him as Manhunter. If he refuses, his identity as Marco will be useless in tracking down Faceless and his Vulture Syndicate. But if I do... Wait a minute. As long as I'll know which waiter is the gunman, all I have to do is keep an eye on him and move before he can.
Right.
Smart thinking, Marco.
So now we go to the night of the gala ball.
Yes.
The host says, So glad you could come, Marco. Wait, that's not it.
So glad you could come, Marco. Have you ever met Manhunter?
So you did the hand thing, and that helped.
Yeah.
That's what I tell my students when they're singing Italian songs.
Yeah.
They can't get the language right. I say, use your hand. Do your hand like on a television.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because as you know, Italian has those wonderful beats and accents and stuff like that. So it helps to physicalize it.
Yeah, well, of course I know that. just then... Marco spots the waiter, the guy with the crescent scar on his left cheek,
and yeah.
He passes off the weapon.
Right.
And after transferring the weapon, Marco Xavier quietly slips out to the terrace.
He says, lucky for me, there's such a big crowd here. No single guest, including Marco, will be missed, enabling me to switch to Manhunter.
Where I will receive the greatest honor.
Ah, here he is, friends. I present the greatest single force against crime and evil of our time, the Manhunter from Mars.
At that very moment, while Manhunter accepts the plaudits of his admirers, another transaction is taking place. That waiter with the crescent scar on his cheek is giving the weapon to someone else, someone that Manhunter hasn't seen, and now he's not going to know to track him. He's going to be tracking the guy with the crescent scar on his cheek.
So, as the evening wears on, Martian Manhunter says, all I have to do is keep my eyes on Scarface. The instant I notice him going for the weapon, I'll slam him hard.
Well, this other guy now has a clear shot of Manhunter at last. Here goes.
Okay.
Next instant, from an unexpected direction, comes the lethal shot.
Someone is shooting a flamethrower.
Great son, says Manhunter. One more blast and I'm finished.
Ha ha, Mr. V was right. We've got Manhunter on the run.
Manhunter disappears. Apparently to go change into the image of Mr. Tsutsi. So he tells...
So Tsutsi runs into himself.
Right, he runs into himself.
Gulp! Who are you?
Why, I'm you, Tsutsi, my dear friend. Please, stay hidden for a little while longer, will you? Well, he doesn't need any Manhunter powers to tackle this clown with the gun.
He picks him up.
Picks him up and tosses him into the air.
Crashing him into the other waiter, the crescent moon face.
Yep. Brief minutes later... The crowd assumes that it was actually Tsutsi.
Yes.
Who did all this punching and running. And Manhunter reappears. And you don't need me any longer, Mr. Tsutsi, not with such a powerhouse like you around to protect your guests.
As Manhunter leaves, however, a disquieting thought enters his mind.
All's well that ends well, except for one thing. What's a Martian accent, I wonder?
All's well that ends well, except for one thing. Somehow, Faithless has discovered my fatal weakness to fire. And all Vulture has to do now is stop me, is light a match.
But the next day, Marco Xavier receives another summons from Mr. V, and when he arrives...
I do not blame you for the failure, Xavier. It was the fault of those stupid fools.
What stupid fools, Mr. V?
Surely you must realize my agents gave you the wrong weapon. Nothing but an ordinary portable flamethrower. They should have given you a new laser ray, which can penetrate any solid object on Earth.
There's got to be an easier way to do that voice.
Except Manhunter Faceless, I've got news for you. It's the ordinary flamethrower that can really stop me. And am I glad you don't know that after all? Toot-toot-toot-toot-toot. Yeah, how do people do that in movies and television? Do that guttural scream.
Oh,
don't have to cough immediately. What?
A package is arriving.
To our house?
Yes.
What? How exciting.
The Enterprise Rent-A-Truck.
Oh. Is it...
It's something I ordered on payday. Another pair of comfortable stretch khaki dress pants.
I ordered something on payday, too, so it might be for me.
Oh, okay. Well,
you want to wager and then fight over it?
Sure. I'll raise you a quarter.
Okay. I see your quarter and raise you 50 cents.
I see your 50 cents and raise you a dollar.
How big is the package?
I don't know.
What's the person delivering it look like? I can't see anything from this angle.
Well, they just went into the truck. Butler has now realized that
there's... Yes. I say we rip out this whole wall and just put a bank of windows here so I could see everything.
I agree. I would love to have more light in here.
Okay. Let's do it. Hey,
what?
You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can find us on our sister podcast, Nerd Orchestra, dropping monthly. And you can find us right back here next week with Sea Devils, kicking up their feet in the sand. Sea Devils, staying far away from the land.
Did you just make that up?
No, I adapted it from the 1973 film Tom Sawyer, starring Johnny Whitaker and Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
In her first screen kiss.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
She had to kiss Johnny Whitaker?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. What a disappointment.
Yeah, and of course, she turned her lesbian.
A kiss can't turn you gay.
That's what Johnny Whitaker says.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, that's it. Anything to add?
No, I hope you have a great week.
I hope you have a great week, even though you're leaving me for two nights.
But I'll be back.
Oh, you're coming back? Bye.
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
We'll keep us sailing along.
High in the sky, there's no curtain.
Yes, we'll have fun. So everyone come on.
Hey, you on the ground.
You on the ground.
Take a look up and see what we found.
Nothing to tie us. Bluebirds come up to guide us.
When you're beside me, we can.